Devour the Podcast is for mature audiences only. Devour the Podcast.
Hello and welcome everybody to episode 27 of Devour the Podcast. I'm your host, Dave, and along with me is Jamie.
Hi. Hi, everyone.
So, this week we're doing Absentia for our It Came From the Instant Queue and Pascal Laugier's The Tall Man for our feature. And before we get into our news and our Chew on This segments for this week, I will be recording with Jamie and Mike from Evil Episodes tomorrow evening.
Woo!
To record for Snoop Dogg's Hood of Horror and Tales from the Hood, which I have to watch tonight because I didn't watch them yet. And possibly doing some Rec 3 discussion because I think Mike said he was going to try and watch that before tomorrow.
Well, because and I need someone who's going to be on my side since I had to fight with all those boys of Slasher Cast and they don't make any sense.
I know.
Because they're like, oh, this Ted, this movie, shit in my eyes, B minus.
I watched quite a few movies this weekend, but I caught I watched Rec 2, which I had not seen before, which was good. I thought I really enjoyed it. I watched Rec 3 in preparation to listen to SlasherCast's review of it, which was this past Monday. Really enjoyed that. I had some issues with it, but for the most part, I enjoyed it. And I listened to SlasherCast, and like they're ripping into the movie, and then they get the grades, and they're like, yeah, mostly high, pretty good grades. And I'm like, what? And like, Ted said it shit in his eyes. I was like, seriously? And you're still giving it a relatively good grade. It's like any movie that's ever done that to me, I failed it miserably because it's, you know, that's not a good thing. So I don't understand, but
maybe, I don't know. Maybe he has a thing for, yeah, I don't know. Maybe he's like he likes his movies scatological where they aim for his eyes.
But I would recommend if you guys haven't seen Rec 3, I think it's available on VOD right now, or it still is rather. Definitely you should check it out. It is good. I enjoyed it. It's, if you look at it from the perspective of it being like every other third movie in a series where they do something different, you'll enjoy it a lot more because it does change up the typical Rec thing. It's not, it's also not really a prequel. It's more of a side story that happens during the events of the first movie, if that makes sense.
Yeah, see, it's like I said, it expands the universe.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with that.
And I like
that. Yeah, I did too. And I mean, I like the characters for the most part. And I don't really want to go into full review of it right now because we're going to do that probably tomorrow. I will probably record that for bonus content for our show, but I enjoyed Rec 2. I enjoyed Rec 3. I also caught VHS, which I enjoyed it. I didn't like Ty West's segment particularly. I thought it was slow and meandering and didn't really go anywhere and wasn't, the payoff wasn't worth it.
That's what I keep hearing.
I know. And it's sad, but the rest of the movie I enjoyed. So that was good. I seem to think I watched something else, but I can't remember other than what we watched for the show this week. So what did you watch this week besides the show stuff for our show and SlasherCast?
Trying to think. Oh, I did. I watched Grimm. And I am no good at this damn game. I can't. I don't know what the hell I watched. Oh, I watched a lot of non-horror stuff this weekend. But mostly, I've been recording a lot. It's like all running together.
Oh, that's like right. That. I watched the... Right, this is completely non-related to horror, but I finished off Charon Uprising finally. Because I'd watched the first two episodes a couple weeks ago, and then I blew through 3 through 7. And I'm really kind of annoyed now because episode 8 doesn't come out till October. And I'm like, God damn it! But it's a good show. I enjoy it. I mean, it's definitely for a younger audience, but the animation is really good. Lance Henriksen plays the voice of the main bad guy. Paul Rubens is one of the bad guys. Elijah Wood plays the hero. The guy who played Tron in the original movie plays the voice of Tron in this. So, as a Tron fan, I'm enjoying it, and I think it's pretty good. But, yeah, so that's pretty much it. Like I said, this week, or, well, we're recording tomorrow. I don't know when the next episode of Evil Episodes is coming out, but that will be the finale of the Hood Horror series you guys were doing.
Mm-hmm.
And New Electric Chair came out, which is awesome. I was just listening to that before we got on today.
Oh, I would like to, I want to, well, say hi to Corey, but extend some well wishes for him.
Oh, yeah, because he's a little...
You know, it was late this week because they had a lot of illness in the family, and you know, so I hope everyone's better. He seems to be... He's being more of a presence now. So I think things are picking up, and...
Because I sent him a message on Facebook, and I was just like, hey, how's the kiddo? And he's like, oh, he's doing better. I was like, oh, good. Oh, so the Outtakes episode finally came out. I spent my Saturday working on that, and as you guys probably heard, hopefully if you heard that episode, we will be releasing one of those just about once a month of new bonus content that we will sit down and record for that show specifically. And if you guys want to take part in a show with us for all that, just email me your Skype name or your Skype contact info. And if we happen to see you online while we're getting ready to record our bonus content episode, we may patch you in. Also, we're going to try and get the Creepy Kitsch gals on at some point. I offered to have them on the show sometime. I said they had an open invitation. They both seemed to really be interested in that. So
cool.
By the way, Cindy says hello. She loves the show. And she said to send her love to you. So.
Aw, that's so sweet. Thank you. Love back.
Oh, and a big congratulations to Shane and the rest of the guys in Die Monster Die. They hit their Kickstarter goal like a day or two early.
I know. I'm so excited. It was, you know, it was on me. my donation just kicked it right over the top. So you can thank me for that next album. I'm so proud of them, because so many times you see people that you support and they have these they have these Kickstarter or Indiegogo things going, and then you know you try to help get the word out there, and then you give them what you can, and then you know, like if it's Kickstarter, you might get an email back that's like, oh, they didn't make their goal, so here's your money back, you know. And I'm just like, oh, that's so sad. It's so sad, you know, because they should at least be able to keep what people did give to them. But so I'm so proud of them for reaching their goal, and I can't wait for the new album. It better be a good one.
Yeah, I think it was, I remember looking at the page, it was like they were, I think maybe kind of like 1,000, I think they were down to like $500 the last couple of days, and it was coming down to the wire. I was like, oh man, they've got like 500 away, I don't know if they're going to make it, and then all of a sudden, you know, they did it. I was like, oh, that's awesome. So, congrats guys, can't wait to hear the new album when it comes out. So, that's pretty much it for pre-show stuff this week. We'll go ahead and jump into the news, unless you have anything else you want to say?
No, except, I do just want to put the word out there that I am working on a surprise, something that I'll be announcing a little bit more when I have a little bit more to announce, but you should look for it. I've already picked the drop date is going to be October 29th.
Oh, awesome.
That is, and that's because I was going to try for September, and then we decided go for a Halloween release. It'll be fun. And it just so happens that the 29th is meets the criteria of when this needs to drop. Right. So you guys be on the lookout for that. I'll be working hard on something new, and hopefully it'll be fun.
Oh, and you'll be doing the second episode of what you calls it.
Oh, right. Mike, I'm
yes,
so
Mike's
sorry.
Show.
Yes. for Badasses, Boobs, and Body Count.
The show, or the podcast.
Yeah.
Which is available now on iTunes.
It is, and I'm so excited because we're going to be talking about two of my favorite things, Jaws and The Exorcist. And like, when do you ever get to talk about those movies on a podcast anymore? You don't, you know? So he offered the invitation and I leapt at it. Like, yes, 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 please. So that'll be recording on Saturday. Awesome. So look for that to come out. That should be fun. And I'm wishing him the best of luck on his show because this is his second episode and I'm so honored to be a part of it so early on. But it'll be... That should be fun. That should be a good discussion. And if you haven't checked out his website, please do. It's fun. I love his reviews. You know, he breaks it down and then has thoughts in my head and all the stuff. I've talked about it before. It's good stuff. So I would definitely go check that out.
And I actually did this in the first episode today. It was good. I really enjoyed it. He did Nightmare City and Ong Bak from 2004, 2003, whatever it was. Both really good reviews. I have not seen either of those films yet, but I may check them out. I did take a glance at his website, and it is, from what I gathered from just literally a glance at it, I was sort of looking, sort of scrolling through everything. It looked good. So I enjoyed the first episode of the show. It was a lot of fun. I look forward to seeing what he does next and what his future episodes will be. And I'm looking forward to the Jaws Exorcist episode. And speaking of Jaws, that actually, I believe, just came out on Blu-ray this past week.
It did. And on Tuesday.
Yes, that's right. Because I've seen a lot of posts on Facebook about people so excited that they got Jaws on Blu-ray.
Yeah, I know. And it really does look beautiful.
That's what I hear.
I've seen bits of the transfer. It is amazing. And oh, that would make me so happy right now.
Actually, I heard Jason from Horrorphilia, actually, he saw it for the first time on Blu-ray. So, and he was really impressed by
it. I know, imagine that.
I know, the lucky bastard. I saw it on, I must have seen it on VHS or on cable, I think, the first time I saw it. But, and I haven't seen it in years, so I can't really say much about it, but it is a good movie. I enjoy it quite a bit. All right, anyway, so let's go ahead and get into the news.
Be quiet a second, will you?
It's 8 o'clock in Los Angeles. It's 9 o'clock in Denver. It's 10 o'clock in Chicago.
In Baltimore, it's 6:42. Time for the 11 o'clock report.
Here's Johnny!
I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubblegum.
Game over, man! Game over!
Your mother sucks cocks in hell.
Okay, and welcome back. It is time for the news. This is everyone's favorite part, right?
Yep. Seems to be.
Okay, now, starting off, you know, we've had Abraham Lincoln as a vampire hunter. We've had Pride and Prejudice and Zombies. Mm-hmm. Okay, now we're going to mash zombies with Shakespeare in Hamlet Z.
Ugh. I'll let you read it first, but I've got some choice words about this one.
Yeah, and I'm sure Nick would too. Hamlet Z, a reinvention of Shakespeare's classic play featuring Denmark under siege by zombies, is available now. I love that it's his classic play featuring Denmark under siege by zombies. Is available now for purchase on Amazon.com, and it is in pre-production for a 2013 stage production in Austin, Texas, by Assembled Productions, LLC. How many times can I say production in one sentence? In Hamlet Z, the murder of the rightful king by his brother Claudius and the incestuous marriage of the queen to Claudius is such an abomination in the eyes of God that it has disrupted the natural order of the cosmos, resulting in the dead rising from the grave and taking revenge on Denmark. Assembled Productions is currently scouting production venues, creating sets and costume designs, and seeking investors for a 2013 production in Austin, Texas. So they don't have their investors in line yet, so who knows? Okay, this is from author Gil Austin, and he says, "The supernatural elements in Hamlet were already there. The ghost of Hamlet's father haunting the castle is famous, but the seed of the idea for Hamlet Z came from a line in the opening scene where they recall that the, quote, sheeted dead did squeak and gibber in the Roman streets when Caesar died. It struck me that the zombie meme is a perfect metaphor for Hamlet's indecision, his moral paralysis. The metaphor becomes more concrete in Act 2 when recognizing the irony of that resonance. Hamlet adopts the guise of a zombie, his antic disposition, or his appearance of madness. Austin maintains that Hamlet Z is not a literary paste-up like Pride and Prejudice and Zombies. He says, I would never have attempted something this epic in scale just for parody. It was vital to me that Hamlet Z should remain true, stylistically and thematically, to Shakespeare's original masterpiece. That meant writing everything in blank verse, blending the new dialogue as seamlessly as possible with the original, and keeping the character consistent between the two versions. It was a daunting task, but in the end, I think it works. Well, I just have to, I have one note about that, and that is that I thought Pride and Prejudice and Zombies did that very well. But anyway. While Hamlet Z is already available in Kindle and trade paperback formats on Amazon.com, Austin does not feel that prior knowledge of the revised plot will deter audiences in 2013. He says, reading it is great, but nothing will be as good as seeing it live on stage. I'm excited by the potential for a fresh look at the character of Hamlet and the rich opportunities for creative staging presented by this scenario. And I think audiences will be excited as well. Assembled Productions, a multimedia production company based in Austin, Texas, completed the feature film My Naked Villainy in 2012. For more information, go to HamletZ.com. All right, and go.
I saw this morning. and I almost put my fist through my monitor. First of all, I've already said that I'm critical. I don't like these whole literary mashup things they've been doing. I mean, I have nothing against historical fiction or speculative historical fiction. You know, there's a whole subgenre of science fiction books that are just basically rewrite history. That's totally cool. That's totally fine. My issue comes when you're taking classic works of literature and just changing them up because you think it's a good idea. Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, Android Karenina, Sense and Sensibility and Sea Monsters. It's annoying to me because it's like, first off, A, why are you fucking with a classic? Regardless of whether I like the classic or not, why are you fucking with it? And B, write your own book instead of throwing, you know, something else into a classic, because that's fucking lazy. And it's called fan fiction, and I don't like fan fiction as a general rule. Now,
and I don't like it.
No, this pisses me off because Hamlet is my favorite play by Shakespeare, period. I love Hamlet. Hamlet does not need fucking zombies in it. Hamlet is perfect the way it is. Throwing zombies into it is wasting my time. So fuck this guy and fuck this production. I hope it fails miserably.
And fuck the zombies he wrote in on.
Yes, that too. And why fucking zombies? God damn it, I'm so sick of zombies at this point. And admittedly, I know I said I liked Wreck 3 recently, and Wreck 2 was good, but I'm so... This is exactly what I hate about the zombie genre now, is that because it's become such a thing, everyone's just like, oh, let's just throw zombies into it. Zombies make everything better. No, they fucking doesn't. Just stop. For the love of God, just stop.
Well, in defense of Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, I really liked that one. I'm a huge Pride and Prejudice fan. I love, well, not just Pride and Prejudice,
but... you're a Jane Austen fan.
Jane Austen fan. Pride and Prejudice is my favorite. I read it about once a year. Mm-hmm. I have many versions of it that I watch, and it's very close to my heart. I love it. When Pride and Prejudice and Zombies came out, I read it immediately, and I thought it was fantastic. I mean, the author did such an amazing job of blending everything. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't say that's lazy. It's actually the opposite of lazy, because it takes a lot of work for them to try to recreate the voice,
right,
and make sure that they stay true to the characters, make sure they stay true to what's going on. You know, I mean, we may be inundated with these things now, but when that one came out, I thought it was very clever and a lot of fun. And some of the choices that were made, I just thought were brilliant as far as the characters go. So I have not read this one, and I'm right there with you as far as like this is getting out of hand. Yeah. You know, I mean, it's like it's the next thing, and yeah, we don't in this country know how to do something once,
yeah,
and then move on to something new.
We run everything into the ground until it's
everything
dead.
And, you know, I really hate that we have to do that, because then people end up hating the things that came first, mm-hmm, that were actually good. And that happens with, you know, everything you can think of. I mean, you know, let somebody smell money around something and they're like, oh, that's great. Reproduce it times 50. We need a lot of those. Yeah. You know, no, we don't. We need one clever one, and then we need something else that's clever, right, and then we need something else that's clever. And, you know, you have to keep us stimulated, not just keep throwing things at you that are over, you know, over and over again. On the other hand, I guess you've got people that have these ideas, and then they want, you know, they're inspired by something and they want to do it. And so should they not be allowed to explore their idea just because I'm sick of it? You know, I don't know.
I'm not saying you shouldn't, but for fuck's sake, really, Shakespeare? Come on. Come on. God damn it.
Well, you know, if you like, you have that power. This is all we'll ever cover about.
Exactly.
It,
that's, and that's the thing, is that I'm going to exercise my right to just not. That's it. I'm not going to think about this again. You know, he's already written it, and he's trying to get it mounted as a stage show. If it fails, fine, it fails. I don't care, because I'm just going to proceed to ignore that it even exists. You know, I'm not going to get all mad and, you know, scream about it on the internet any more than I just did, because...
I was going to say, you just did?
I just did, because I'm not happy about it, but it's like, you know what? I'm not going to read it. I'm not going to, other than just talking about it now in the news, fuck it, I don't care. I'm personally kind of getting, I'm sick of the zombie thing now. It's getting played out to death, and I'm tired of the deluge of crap that we're getting instead of, you know, actual good stuff. So, ugh.
Well, you know what we can do?
What?
We can move on to the
next
story.
Yes, we can.
Hey, do you remember before we were talking about the Attack of the 50-Foot Cheerleader?
Yep.
Well, now there is an official poster and a trailer. The synopsis is a modern-day take on the great Roger Corman genre pictures, and his first ever 3D film, Attack of the 50-Foot Cheerleader, follows a college co-ed who uses an experimental drug to transform herself into a popular beauty, but at a huge price. The film is set to premiere on Epix this August 25th at 10. Hit up their official website for more details. And if you're on UVerse, don't even bother, because I specifically asked them the last time I was on the phone with them what happened to Epix, because we used to get that channel. And then they're like, oh, I don't know. And most of them didn't know. They're like, did we ever get Epix? Have you heard of Epix? They're like asking around.
Yeah, it's available on Xbox Live, but you have to actually have an account with a provider that carries it to be able to watch it. So it's just like, oh, great, this is completely useless to me.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, and Crackle sucks, by the way. I tried to watch Rec 2 on Crackle. I swear to God, every 5 fucking minutes was a commercial. So,
oh, that's a pain in the ass. Yeah,
Crackle sucks.
What I gleaned from this little story tidbit, oddly, was that this is Roger Corman's first 3D movie.
Right.
That just seems so in his wheelhouse.
I know.
You know, as far as, like, he would have hit it at least once over the years, but
I guess not. I don't know.
Interesting.
Yeah.
You know, I think this could be a fun movie. It's different. I mean, of course, you know, giant people have been done before.
Yes.
But, you know, the amazing Colossal Man, Attack of the 50-Foot Woman. But it's fresh for today.
Yeah.
No one's doing this sort of thing right now. And so I think that this is, I do like that. I think that that's a cool idea, that they're actually going outside. And unless they get attacked by zombies in this movie, I think it's going to be pretty fresh. And I think it'll be fun. So,
at best, it'll be a fun B movie. At worst, it'll be a Sci-Fi Channel original quality type movie. So, yeah, you know, and it'll probably be available online or through DVD at some point. So maybe it'll hit Netflix. And I think John Landis is in it somehow. There's a picture of him that'll be in the show notes. And Ted Raimi, too. So who knows?
He's probably going to get killed in a horrible way. Always does, bless his heart.
Yeah,
well, next up, Nicole Snyder and Eric Carmelo unleash a gothic thriller on NBC. This is something else for television. While Nicole Snyder and Eric Carmelo's drama Ringers was canceled recently by the CW, and you know, I really didn't think that was going to last anyway, but it appears as if NBC has seen something that has whet their appetite, and it involves the darker things in life. According to The Hollywood Reporter, Nicole Snyder and Eric Carmelo have sold their untitled gothic thriller to NBC, which will see them pen and executive produce the series alongside TBD Productions, Peter Traugott, and Rachel Kaplan for Universal Television. While not much is known regarding plot details, the site reports that it will be, quote, an untitled sexy gothic thriller set in New Orleans that's described as being rich with tradition, superstition, and murder. Hopefully sex, because, you know.
I didn't, what the hell was Ringers?
Is that not the,
I don't know. I don't watch television, let alone CW.
Well, I don't either, but I was thinking that was the one. Oh, I might be. Was that the one with, Sarah Michelle Gellar, where she played twin?
Maybe. I don't know. I would have to look it up.
Oh, I don't know. I don't watch CW.
Yeah. But anyway, but apparently they're going to do a gothic thriller set in New Orleans, because, you know, everything is set in New Orleans. Eh, whatever. It's going to be on NBC. We'll see how long it lasts. Nah, who knows? If it's good, you guys will probably cover it on Evil Episodes. If it sucks, you'll still end up covering it on Evil Episodes.
Yes. Because Mike has no pity on me.
No.
Okay. Next up for Halloween Horror Nights, classic Universal Monsters and Electronica will be invading your senses. A new fixture is being added to Universal's Halloween Horror Nights, and this one involves the studio's classic movie monsters. Universal's infamous legacy of horror will come to an afterlife in Universal Monsters Remix, an all-new terrifying experience that reimagines the classic horror icons of yesteryear for the 21st century and immerses them in the twisted confines of electronica-inspired music during Halloween Horror Nights at Universal Studios Hollywood. Set within the antechambers of an eerily gothic castle, the new Universal Monsters Remix maze will unleash a cast of movies and most legendary creatures, including Frankenstein's monster and his bride, Dracula and his bride's, I know, he's Mormon? Phantom opera in The Wolfman from deep within the stone fortress, accompanied by ominous strobe lighting effects. Guests will traverse dark and dank arteries of rotting catacombs, hallowed underground crypts, and pagan sacrificial burial chambers. Laced with the murmur of dialogue from Universal's catalog of horror films, guests will be besieged by the relentless sounds of high-energy, horror-inspired dance, dubstep, and industrial music. Okay, wait. You know, I am really, really, really all about the Universal Monsters idea. I love that. But
yeah, I was totally okay with this. And I was like, horror-inspired dance music. All right, that's not that could be okay. Dubstep. Fuck you. Industrial. Okay, I'm totally cool with industrial. I like industrial, but
I do, but I just don't know.
Dubstep. Oh god, dubstep is like the new metal. It's terrible. Fuck, I hate dubstep. Anyway, but
well, details on Halloween Horror Nights are available at Halloween Horror Nights on Facebook at Halloween Horror Nights Hollywood and on Instagram at Horror Nights Hollywood or hashtag Universal HHN. Updates from creative director John Murdy can be found on Twitter at twitter.com/Horror Nights as he reveals a running chronicle of exclusive information. Halloween Horror Nights May's announcement videos can be seen at Universal Studios Hollywood's YouTube channel. And that's going to kick off on September 21st and continue on select nights through October 31st.
Awesome.
So get Halloween people, if you want to see some dubstep in the universe.
Okay, so I was reading that article today and I was like, all right, this sounds like it could be an interesting idea because you could do electronic music by nature is really effective in horror movies. Look at the Halloween soundtrack. They could do, I mean, I could see them doing like industrial, trance, you know, dark wave. You know, there's a dark side to industrial or electronic music that would be great to fit in with this, but fucking dubstep? Why? That's like saying we're gonna do horror movie, we're gonna do, you know, the Universal Monsters with house music. What? Why? Why would you do that?
To get this response from you. That's
clearly.
I would do it because it's hilarious. Yes.
And also to make somebody happy who likes dubstep. Yes, Mark, I know you're listening and I know you like dubstep, so just, yeah. You enjoy your fart noises, and that's what dubstep sounds like to me. Wub, 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 fart noises, wub, wub, wub.
Can you send that to me on an MP3, please?
Yes.
Okay.
Anyway.
Next up, I have some news about Eli Roth's Gore. What was I slipping into you there for a second? I was like, goodbye, everybody. There is a brutal promo trailer for Eli Roth's Goratory.
And to be honest, it's really not that brutal.
Oh.
Yeah.
Shit. We recently announced that Eli Roth is venturing into the world of haunted houses with his attraction, The Goratorium. While we didn't have much to go on the first time, details have now been released, and we also have a gore-filled promo trailer that is apparently not so much gore-filled for the upcoming attraction.
Oh, it's gore-filled. It's just not particularly horrifying.
From the press release, The Goratorium will be destination for both horror fans and tourists from around the world 365 days a year. So you don't have to try to get there, you know, for Halloween. Mm-hmm. It's going to be there. All right. We are creating the most intense live terror experience a person can have, incorporating the latest technology with old-fashioned scares. This will be, I mean, some guy like behind a door jumping. This will be the premiere, but he'll look tranny while he's doing it. This haunted experience in the world, filled with all kinds of surprises. Well, they're being very ambitious about this.
Right?
They've spent years planning it, and all their nightmares are finally coming true. Well, maybe ours will, too.
Maybe.
No matter which haunted houses you've been through, you have never been through anything quite like The Goratorium. You're going to use that. The multi-level maze of frights submerges visitors into the tale of Sin City's most deadly mythical hotel and casino, the Delmont. The self-guided horror experience begins in the lobby of the Delmont and unveils gruesome and ghastly sights of past hotel guest victims and the serial-killing family behind the deeds at every turn. Employing high-tech Vegas showmanship with old-fashioned scares, the terrifying labyrinth of live actors, animatronic frights, and stunning special effects is contained in a vintage hotel setting that rivals Hollywood's best movie sets. Located across the street from City Center in the cosmopolitan of Las Vegas, Eli Roth's Goratorium also includes a freaky 60s-inspired lounge called Baby Dolls. Featuring a magnificent view of City Center, the bar will entertain with caged zombie dancers and live feedings. Goratorium also features a one-of-a-kind horror retail shop and a venue for premier events with a to-go bar called Bloody Mary's. Eli Roth's Goratorium is the brainchild of Roth, best known as the creator of the Hostel and Cabin Fever franchises, and for his role in front of the camera as Donnie the Bear Jew Donowitz. Oh, you know, I have my issues with Roth and his movies, but I do love him. I do love me some Bear Jew. The way he swings that bat. And he won a SAG Best Ensemble and BFCA Critics' Choice Award for Best Acting. Like, look at that. Look at him go. His film label, Eli Roth Presents, produced the enormously successful horror hit The Last Exorcism. Enormously successful? Really?
I think it made some decent money, yeah.
Huh, I don't know if I would call it enormously successful.
No, but it was all right.
The horror series Hemlock Grove for Netflix. You know, he is all over the place.
I know.
You can hit website for more information, and of course that's going to be in the show notes, but he is just dabbling here and there. You know what's interesting is I heard someone yesterday, someone referred to him as the, what would they say, the not late great, because you know, yeah, he's not late, but it was something like the amazing, I don't know, they were going on and on about Eli Roth, and I'm like, in the big scheme of things, he really hasn't been around that long.
No.
He hasn't much. I mean, like, I don't know. I was just...
He made a big splash with his couple of movies he's done, but he's only done four or three movies. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, okay, yeah, you did great. You've gotten progressively better as a director, but I can't say you're, you know, amazing yet. You know, this does sound like an awesome attraction, admittedly. I like the idea of a one-of-a-kind horror-themed store. That sounds fucking awesome. And because it's in Vegas, that means that they're going to, you know, really go balls out, which would be like, if I'm going to go to Vegas, because I went to Vegas once and it was a nightmare because it was
Vegas. Make sure to invite me.
Yeah, it was ridiculously hot and horrible and I hate heat. But if I was going to go back to Vegas, that would be something I would want to check out because that sounds like it'd be pretty goddamn awesome. And I love dark rides anyway. So a big, you know, crazy horror theme maze would be cool. Like I said, the trailer, it's got gore in it, but it's not like, oh my god, so, oh, it's just a lot of like, you know, here's some gory stuff happening, and then, you know, the Goratorium, it's like, okay, that didn't tell me shit about this, other than implying that I'll start having bloody hallucinations after I go to it, so, okay. I'll be much more interested if they do, like, a behind the scenes, like, or a promotional video, like, showing some of the inside of the place. That would be really cool. That'll get me more excited.
Oh, that would be nice. I would like that.
You know,
I bet they will, you know,
gets closer to opening.
They're going to be jizzing all over the place with news about this. Mm-hmm. So you just wait. It'll come. You know, it will. Oh, it'll come. okay. God.
Anyway.
Damn the boys of SlasherCast. Look what they do to me.
Whatever.
I was so innocent before that. Okay. Warner Premiere is closing up shop. Does that mean that the Lost Boys series is staked for good? Only if we're lucky. Warner Brothers announced Monday that its home video brand Warner Premiere is closing its doors for good. This is a division that gave us genre titles like the direct-to-DVD sequels Lost Boys The Tribe and Lost Boys The Thirst. The branch of Warner Home Entertainment premiered in 2007 with Return to House on Haunted Hill. Other horror titles followed, like The Hills Run Red. When Michael Dougherty's Trick or Treat was being kicked around by the studio, the Halloween favorite was dumped to Warner Premiere for release. Dumped.
I know, how
about
right?
that? I'm so angry. Years later, I'm still angry about that, how that movie was treated.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to turn this into a story about Trick or Treat, but I'm pissed.
Yeah.
Because what if, just imagine, what if that had never seen the light of day? What if we didn't get it? We wouldn't know it was out there, obviously,
yeah.
So we wouldn't know what we were missing. But look what we would have been missing.
Mm-hmm.
Makes me so mad.
Well, we got it. That's what's important.
We did. Yes, we did. The company also packaged Mortal Kombat Legacy, the popular digital series that rolled out on cinema. Deadline says that Warner Brothers intends to take any future projects and simply fold them into Warner Brothers Warner Home Video, Warner Digital Distribution, or Warner Brothers Animation. The question now is the Lost Boys direct-to-DVD series dead? The second film did well enough to spawn a third, and during press for the latter, there were rumblings of a fourth. But that was some time ago. and buzz on another film has grown quiet. Warner seems more interested in pursuing Mortal Kombat. A second season of the digital series is going into production soon. You know, which I actually watched.
Yeah, I did too. It was really good.
It was good. I was so impressed. I thought it
and
was good.
And admittedly, I like the classic Mortal Kombat movie, despite how terrible it is. I mean, I could admit that it's a bad movie. I still love it. I mean, I own Street Fighter, for Christ's sake. And that's a horrible movie.
Oh, but no, but it's fun.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean,
you know, my favorite, though, is Dead or Alive.
Oh, I still haven't seen Dead or Alive.
Fucking love Dead or Alive. So good.
I also haven't seen Tekken yet. But I think there was a Tekken movie. I don't remember. Anyway.
But I don't really give a shit about most of the things that they put out. So
yeah. But, more Lost Boys sequels? No, thank you. But, you know, more Mortal Kombat Legacy? Yes, please. Hills Run Red, I liked. Obviously, I love Trick or Treat. I still haven't seen Return to House on Haunted Hill. I've heard really bad things about it. So I like the first one. I mean, the remake from 2000, whatever it was, with Jeffrey Rush and whoever else was in that fucking remake.
I heart Jeffrey Rush.
Yes, I do too. He's awesome. So, anyway.
So, yeah, oh, well, you know, they're going. Sad to see them go.
Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, I don't...
Bring on some Mortal Kombat.
Yeah, I don't understand why they need so many, like, subdivisions to release these movies and things. It's like, just...
I mean, they already have three. Just pick one.
Yeah.
We don't have to have a new division for everything that you release.
Exactly.
This is our vampire division. This is our werewolf division. It bites. Okay. The very last piece of news talks about serial killer.
Yep.
So, you know, I'm happy about that. But that makes me sound awful. but IFC Midnight opens the Jeffrey Dahmer files. IFC Midnight has been acquiring and distributing some pretty stellar horror flicks for some time now. But it seems that they are branching out into the world of documentaries, which makes me happy. I love documentaries. First on their list is the acquisition of the documentary, The Jeffrey Dahmer Files. Right, and this comes from the press release. It's quoted as, IFC Midnight announced today that the company is acquiring all North American and UK rights to director Chris James Thompson's documentary, The Jeffrey Dahmer Files. Thompson also produced the film with Jack Turner and co-wrote the screenplay with Andrew Swant and Joe Rippenhoff. Chris Smith and Barry Polterman executive produced the project, which world premiered in competition at the 2012 SXSW Film Festival, and also played the 2012 Hot Docs Film Festival in Toronto. IFC Midnight is planning an early 2013 release for the documentary. In 1991, Jeffrey Dahmer was arrested in Milwaukee and sentenced to 957 years in prison for killing 17 people and dismembering their bodies. The Jeffrey Dahmer Files is a documentary that explores the city of Milwaukee by meeting those surrounding Dahmer during and after his hidden spree. Recollections from Milwaukee Medical Examiner Jeffrey Jensen, Police Detective Patrick Kennedy, and neighbor Pamela Bass are interwoven with archival footage and everyday scenes from Dahmer's life, working collectively to disassemble the facade of an ordinary man leading an ordinary existence. Jonathan Searing, President of Sundance Select IFC Films, said, Chris James Thompson has made one of the creepiest documentaries of the year that lingers in the mind long after the film has ended. He's approached the well-known subject of Jeffrey Dahmer in a new and inventive way that managed to completely unnerve us. It also promises you will never eat a sandwich quite the same way. We look forward to working with Chris as well and the entire team that made this film. Thompson commented, having grown up on watching IFC Films, for them to pick up my first feature feels like a dream come true. I couldn't be more proud of this film and everyone from Milwaukee to Bombay that helped mold it from a four-year meandering experiment into the fresh cinematic oddity it is today. The world needs to see it. Well, of course he thinks the world needs to see it. The deal for the film was negotiated by Ariana Bacco, Senior Vice President of Acquisitions and Productions for Sundance Selects IFC Films, with Josh Brown of Submarine Entertainment on behalf of the filmmakers. And that's it for that. I'm interested. I'm going to be interested because it's a documentary about a serial killer. Yeah. So, of course, I'm going to be interested about that. But there was the movie Dahmer with... What's the cutie pie? Jeremy Renner. That was actually the first time I'd ever seen Jeremy Renner, and it might have been the first thing he did. I don't know what his credits are, you know, that far back. But I thought that was a really good movie,
yeah.
And he did a great job. And there are some really good. I mean, some of the best ones out there can be kind of disturbing. Like there's Bundy is pretty disturbing, I think, but it's a good watch. But anyway, I'm looking forward to this, and I guess it'll be interesting. My favorite part about this, what I think will be most interesting, is the recollections mm-hmm. from, you know, I mean, his neighbor, even. Like, someone should ask her, didn't you smell anything? Or, you know, something.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I'm always down for a good documentary, and this one sounds like it's going to be really good, so I'm definitely looking forward to it.
Okay, well, that is it for the news. Out, I'm done.
Awesome. We're going to skip Chew on This for this week. We're going to save that for the bonus content episode, but we're going to go ahead and give you guys a little teaser of that. It's going to be about film criticism, and its part in the world of entertainment. And we'll go into it more on the bonus content episode, but keep that in your heads. So we will be back in just a second with Absentia.
They say every house in America should have an electric chair. And every man just once in his life should sit in it. Just so that he can feel the power of millions of gallons of electricity flow through his veins.
I got an electric chair. That's all I need.
You get an electric chair, Sheldon, you don't have to worry about the audience. You get an electric chair, you can tell them anything you want, as long as it's real. You get yourself an electric chair and it'll sit there all night long. Kind of a funny idea, sitting in an electric chair and doing a show. Well, think of the therapeutic value of an electric chair and all the money it is. Yes, an electric chair in every home.
The Electric Chair, a show about horror. ElectricChairShow.com.
Electric Chair. Wow.
It came from the instant queue.
Let's call them lucid dreams that you're having. They started about the time you decided to declare him dead in absentia. You're describing visual, auditory, even tactile hallucinations.
He's not the only one, not even close.
They declared Walter dead in 2002. I ran into him just last week.
You see me?
Left behind a son who says his dad was taken away by a monster.
It's sleeping.
I saw
you
it.
You hallucinated
I
it.
Saw it.
Things go missing in this neighborhood, and those things turn up in one place.
I was seeing things too. They felt so real.
We found a body in the tunnel.
Oh my God!
Always in this neighborhood, you lock the door.
I know how that sounds.
You see your eyes?
We're gonna need to question you a lot more.
I swear to you, I could hear him in the walls.
Absentia. This came out in 2011, and the synopsis is, a woman and her sister begin to link a mysterious tunnel to a series of disappearances, including that of her own husband. So it was written and directed by Mike Flanagan. Katie Parker is Callie. Courtney Bell is Trisha. Dave Levine is Detective Ryan Mallory. Morgan Peter Brown is Daniel Riley. Oh, Daniel. Yeah, that's the husband. Justin Gordon is Detective Lundgren, and Doug Jones plays Walter Lambert. First off, this was a movie that Midnight Corey had recommended and spoke very highly of on The Electric Chair, and so I was eventually going to get around to watching it. I know you watched it for Evil Episodes last episode, which I didn't actually listen to the review of because I didn't want it spoiled, and also because that episode was really hard to hear.
It was. Well, fortunately, Mike has figured out what the problem is with the level, so that shouldn't be a problem again.
Yeah, I talked to him about that. I was like, dude, what the hell? And he's like, yeah, I don't know. But anyway, so first off, when this movie starts, my immediate thought was, oh, they're in California. Like, I knew right away it was in California, and it is set in Glendale, California. But this was really, really good. This was probably one of the better Instant Queue movies we've done in a while, I think. It's a slow burn. It's very character-driven. It is very small cast. It's really just, you know, Callie, Trisha, and the cops are, like, the main characters we see through most of the movie. And basically what happens is it Callie is the sister, is the younger sister, or is it Trisha who's the younger sister?
I was trying to remember that, too, and I can't Right.
Yeah, I'm drawing a blank.
Both sound like younger sister names.
Yeah.
If that makes any sense.
It does make sense. So anyway, all right, I'm going to look this up on IMDb because I'm not sure. But anyway, so Daniel is the husband, and he's disappeared 7 years ago. So he's going to be declared dead in absentia. Because you have to wait 7 years for someone who's disappeared. You have to wait 7 years for them to continue to not have appeared again, to declare mm-hmm. them officially dead, et cetera, et cetera. And so the younger sister comes into town to kind of help out with the paperwork and moral support and all that stuff. And we kind of get that. Okay, Callie is the younger sister. Trisha is the older sister. Callie shows up in town to help her sister, Trisha. And Trisha's pregnant. We don't really know who the father is until a little bit later in the movie, which I'm not going to spoil it, but, you know, you find out. But Daniel just randomly shows up one day, out of the blue. He's been gone for 7 years, not a word or anything from him, and then he just appears. And
they just got to the point where she declared him dead legally.
Legally declared dead. She'd gotten the death certificate in the mail, and he shows up. And it all ties into this tunnel down the street from their neighborhood. And the detective warns her to, you know, keep the doors locked because there's been some break-ins and things are going missing. And it all kind of centers around this tunnel. And there's, like I said, it's a slow burn, but there's an interesting story. It's well written. I think the dialogue was good. The interactions between Callie and Trisha felt natural. There's a little CGI in this, not too much to be distracting. It looks, the couple times you get really good CGI shots, you're like, ugh, that's not great. Doug Jones has a great kind of moment. He's really in the film maybe only a couple times, but he has a couple of really good scenes in the movie. And I thought this was really, just really good. It played along with some different ideas and kind of wasn't what I was expecting from it. Like, I didn't really know what I was getting into, and I never had a clear grasp on what was going to happen next. And I also really like that there's a scene early on where Callie and Trisha are talking, and Trisha's talking about how all these different scenarios she thought of what happened to Daniel when he disappeared. And we actually see those, you know, sequences of what could have happened to him. You know, like at one point she's like, oh, he's a CIA agent or something, and he's on the lam and he checks in periodically, or, you know, he woke up with amnesia and he's happy alive somewhere else now, you know, all of these different things. We get to see those little scenes, which is nice. And then that plays into the end of the movie again as well, as other characters, you know, are rationalizing what could have happened to someone. So what did you think?
I thought I really liked it. I thought it was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the fact that they wove in the lore,
mm-hmm.
you know, from years before, which I thought was pretty interesting. I did have some complaints about some of the acting,
mm-hmm.
mainly Trisha.
Mm-hmm.
I thought Callie was an amazing character.
Yeah.
I loved her character. And it's just overall, it was a fun movie because the whole time I'm like, oh, like, what does this mean? And oh, what does that mean? And oh, so you're watching the whole thing trying to, you know, picking up on the clues, mm-hmm. but you don't necessarily know where they're going right away. And it actually went pretty dark.
Yeah.
And toward the end there, when it gives back the baby.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, that was...
I was like, woo!
Yeah, because for a second there, I was like, what the... Oh, damn.
Right.
Yeah, this was...
So it was pretty brutal. The only thing I have questions about, really, is that, you know, I would like to know more about what happens to the people...
Yeah.
When they've been abducted, because she did say that it enslaves them and brutalizes them, but, you know, that could mean a lot of different things.
Yeah.
And whatever it was obvious that it was something that was sort of core shattering.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, these people looked, when they got back, when they managed to escape, they were wrung out mm-hmm. and it was awful.
Yeah.
So I would like to have gone a little bit deeper into that world just for my own sadistic curiosity. But, I think they did an excellent job.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think it would have been interesting to see kind of maybe to see a little bit more of what the creature was, maybe to see a little bit more of that world. But considering probably the budget wasn't huge for this, I could see why they didn't do that. And I kind of like the mystery of not really knowing what it is that is happening. You know, not there's no real clear definitive explanation of what the creature could be or what the creature is or what is really going on. I mean, we get an explanation of what's happening, but there's never any clear explanations of exactly what the hell's going on. It's very much like a fairy tale in that sense. And I really like that, especially because Callie's the first one who kind of figures out what's going on. But for reasons that I'm not going to spoil, nobody believes her. And it makes sense. It's not just, you know, your typical like, oh, we don't believe you because, you know, blah. It's like, oh, this is a, you know, there's an there's a clear explanation of why they don't believe her. And, you know, things that kind of unfold from there. And I didn't see the ending coming. Like, I really was surprised by the ending. I was like, holy shit, that's not at all where I thought this was going to go. And I was really, really impressed. So Midnight Corey was absolutely right for recommending this. This is was really, really good. And like I said, probably one of the best movies we've done for Instant Q in a long time.
I agree with that. I definitely agree with that. This was a very pleasant surprise for me, just because you don't ever know what to expect.
Yeah.
But I was pleased all the way through. I really don't have anything bad to say about this movie. I don't have many complaints. I mean, like I said, I wasn't crazy about Trisha, but what can you do? It didn't bring the movie down for me.
Right.
Yeah,
I liked all the actors. Trisha didn't really bother me too much. I was fine with her. Yeah, on a technical side, I had a couple of issues with the camera when they were doing still shots, where the camera was kind of just shaking a little bit. As I'm like, seriously, guys, you couldn't have gotten a goddamn tripod?
Oh.
When they were doing sort of static outdoor shots, and it's just like, tripod. Right. For the love of God, tripod. Because any other time they had these really nicely, you know, the shots were good, everything was fine. It looks really good for, I would say, just a ballpark, I would say this movie was maybe $5,000, $6,000, if that much. Because, I mean, it looks fantastic, but it's you could tell it's a low-budget movie, but it doesn't look cheap. Like, it looks really good for being probably a relatively low-budget film. And, you know, the tunnel that they use is just fantastic and a great piece of natural scenery. And just, you know, like I said, I really enjoyed this. And I, as soon as the movie started, I pegged it as California before they even announced it was Glendale. I was like, yeah, this is definitely California. And I was looking at some of the houses like, maybe this is Northern California. And then I was like, oh, Glendale. Oh, all right, whatever. I would recommend this. And I would say for the rating, I think I'd probably give this a 4. Like I said, this is probably one of the better Instant Q movies we've watched. The cover on Netflix sucks. Like, it totally sets you up for a different kind of movie. Like, if I had seen this at a video store and just looked at the cover, I probably wouldn't have picked it up because the cover is terrible. But I'm really glad I did watch this. I'm really glad Corey recommended it as well. So I would say a 4. And definitely worth your time. Jamie, your final thoughts and recommendations?
You know, I recommend it. It's definitely, definitely worth your time. I've talked about it on two shows now. So obviously, yeah. And I'm going to go, I was going to say 4, but my God, we keep having the same ratings lately. Have you noticed that? people are going to start talking about it. You know what? I'm going to say 4. I really liked it. You know, yeah. It wasn't perfect. It's, you know, it's hard to be perfect, but it was so good. Yeah. It was so good. So I can't go 5, but I did really, really like it. And so we're going to go 4.
Okay. Awesome. So there you go, guys. You should definitely check out Absentia. It is available on Netflix Instant Watch this week, unlike our previous week where we did Trick or Treat, which is no longer on Instant Watch. But definitely check it out. It's worth your time. It is kind of a slow burn. So if you're not into movies like that, you're probably not going to enjoy this. But it's an interesting story, and the characters kept my interest in the whole thing. So that is it for Absentia, and we'll be right back with Pascal Laugier's The Tall Man.
Our show is now on Stitcher. Stitcher is smart radio for your phone. Listen to us on your iPhone, Android phone, Kindle Fire, and other devices with Stitcher. Find it in your app store or at Stitcher.com. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio.
We have just seen rushes direct from Hollywood of pictures being released in the coming weeks. Here's a glimpse of a few of them coming to this theater soon.
You're sitting at home and your stomach is bubbling.
No food in the fridge and your hunger is growing.
You hop in your car and head straight to get drive-through. Murder with fries is described as fast food. To be baked and broiled,
thrown in a pan to be fried in some oil.
Weakling. Everyone hated Melvin.
I'm gonna take this mop and shove it down your throat.
They teased him.
I wanna do it with you.
Okay.
They taunted him. They tormented him until he had a horrifying accident and fell into a vat of nuclear waste. Transforming little Melvin into a hideously deformed creature of superhuman size and strength. Melvin became the Toxic Avenger. The first superhero born out of nuclear waste. Yes, the muggers and the rapists didn't know what law and order was until the Toxic Avenger came to town.
Holy shit!
I don't know what it was, but it saved my life.
All right, everybody, drop your tacos or I'll blow your brains out.
The vandals and the perverts had their way with the little people of Tromaville until the Toxic Avenger ripped them apart. The Toxic Avenger. His face is so terrifying. We can't show it to you now. You'll have to see the movie for yourself. The Toxic Avenger can bend steel with his bare hands.
Oh, we're all a kid. Get it?
Leap small cars in a single bound. He crushes drug pushers. Smashes hit and run drivers. And gives all criminals their just desserts. The Toxic Avenger.
He's a hero.
He's a fighter. He's a lover.
Well, Melvin, you're beautiful.
The good citizens love him. The fat and corrupt hate him.
Kill that bastard for me. You gotta kill him.
Yeah.
Will he survive? For incredible explosive action, you must see the Toxic Avenger. He's a different kind of hero. The Toxic Avenger is coming to your town. Look out.
And now our feature presentation.
Yes?
Hey, sweetheart. That's a beautiful song.
Oh. Hey, guys, dinner in half an hour. Okay. Mom.
I saw him two times.
Right there, like he was trying to avoid the bridge.
There's nothing next to him. No one outside. You, Scott.
What, the tall man? No, that's a myth. There's no tall man.
He exists.
It's not the boogeyman or the devil or any of that old wives' tale crap.
Hi, guys.
The last kid disappeared 2 months ago. Won't be long before the next one goes.
So you believe it too?
Can we play together again when you get home?
I promise. Good night, David.
Tall Man. This was released this year. It's on video on demand right now and will be hitting theaters August 31st, I believe. And the synopsis is, when her child goes missing, a mother looks to unravel the legend of the Tall Man, an entity who allegedly abducts children. This was written and directed by Pascal Laugier of Martyrs. Stars Jessica Biel as Julia Denning, Jodell Ferland as Jenny, Stephen McHattie as Lieutenant Dodd, William B. Davis as Sheriff Chestnut, Samantha Ferris as Tracy, and Eve Harlow as Christine. First off, this is not really a horror movie. So, if you're going into this expecting something like Martyrs, that's not what you're going to get. There's very little gore, there's very little violence in this film, but it is similar to Martyrs in that the story is structured in a similar way, and it deals with the kind of a philosophical ideas towards the end the same way Martyrs did. This movie knocked me on my ass yesterday. I was fucking stunned. I sat and watched this and I kind of, you know, I'm sitting there watching it and I am trying to figure out, okay, what's going on? What's this all about? You know, Jessica Biel, first of all, and we're not going to spoil this one because I think you guys should definitely check it out. And it's, like I said, it's on video on demand. But the first thing that was very striking about it was that visually it's fucking beautiful. This is beautifully shot film. Beautiful. Set in Washington. Pretty sure they actually shot in Washington, or they shot in Canada and called it Washington, but it's gorgeous looking film. And you know, you hear Jessica Biel and you think, oh, you know, she's a really attractive actress. She looks really just like a plain person in this, which was like, oh wow, you know, and that fits the character.
Part of it was the hair. It was because she had such dark hair and she was so pale, it just washed her out.
Yes.
You know, so she didn't look as good as she normally, like, she didn't glow. Mm-hmm. And you know, look as good as she normally,
which I think
does.
Definitely helped for that character, because it's like, this is a story set in a, you know, kind of a dying mining town in Washington. And so, you know, we're kind of going through the story at the first, and you're like, all right, you know, she's this nurse, and everyone in town loved her husband, but he's dead now, and you know she's got her son, and then her son gets kidnapped. She's trying to save him, and then things start to turn, and everything's going upside down. And you're like, "What the hell is going on?" And it gets to the end, and I'm stunned. I'm sitting there in silence, you know. And the movie, you know, without giving away the ending, it ends with a character who's been narrating the movie throughout, or parts of the movie rather, is narrating again, and we fade to black, and the character is still talking. And then it goes silent, and then we get the credits, and I'm sitting there, and there's tears just streaming down my face. I'm just, I couldn't do anything but sit there and cry. I was just so, just profoundly, you know, moved by this movie. It has issues, yes. Some of the story, a lot of the story kind of is weird in a lot of ways, and it's, like I said, it's structured like Martyrs, where it takes a turn that you don't expect it to take. And then it keeps doing those kind of turns. But for me, the ending made up for that. And I kind of feel like if this is what Logier is going to keep doing with his films, like, you know, how Shyamalan always does like a big twist at the end. If Logier is going to keep producing films like this that are visually beautiful and, you know, deal with kind of tough subjects and end on, you know, these emotional, really tough questions and feelings, then I'm totally fine with that. He can keep making them, and I will keep watching them. So right out for me, this is an absolute, this is an absolutely amazing film, and you need to see it. I almost watched it again today, just so I could be kind of caught up on it again. But I didn't know if I could do it.
Aww. Well, I didn't have quite the same effect that you did. Mm-hmm. I did really like it. I did, and I think it, even though I can't really classify this as horror.
No, it's not in the least. More of a dark drama,
but
or mystery thing.
I think that Logier is still clearly present. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is as much different. It's a much different narrative, yeah, than say Martyrs is, but you can definitely see him in there. Mm-hmm. I was kind of stuck on Jessica Biel.
Okay.
And it's not that I have anything against her. I adore her. I mean, she's the only thing worth watching in the Texas Chainsaw Massacre remake.
Dare
you ask me.
Not appreciate Arlie Ermey.
Oh, okay. I forgot. Yeah. I forgot. Okay. I do love him. But, I mean, well, not for watching, though. I mean, you know, he's great for listening.
Yes, he is.
But she's got that ass. And then but and the problem is that in the beginning of this movie, there was a lot of her running around wet, mm-hmm, you know, in industrial areas. And I could not get that movie out of my mind. Mm. Like, I just kept seeing her in Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And I'm like, stop it, stop it, stop it. You know, but it wouldn't work. Like, it just kept worming its way back into my head. Mm-hmm. So I was like, I just felt like if it had been another actress, I would have been affected differently. But she did okay. It's not like I'm complaining about her. I don't really necessarily think she has the depth for a character like this. I think that, she did an okay job, but I think that had it been a different actress who could convey more emotion, I think it would have been even better.
Okay, I could see that.
But I do like, I like the fact that, I mean, this is a real legend. The tall man, mm-hmm, is a real thing, and it has different variations depending on what part of the world you're from. Mm-hmm. But one thing remains constant, and that is that the tall man takes children. Mm-hmm. And so I thought it was pretty cool to take a real legend and then do something like this with it, mm-hmm, which of course we're not going to say
no
what that is, but and also did you feel like by the end of it, when, you know, you're listening to the final narration, mm-hmm, like you were talking about, do you find that you felt like there was like a, kind of moment where through the entire film, you're watching these various stories of these various people, but then in the end, you realize that the whole time you've actually been watching the journey of one person.
That, I think that's what really got me was that.
I love that.
Trying to piece together this whole thing. And I mean, even towards the last 5 minutes of the movie, even at that point, I was still kind of like running through my head, like, okay, well, you know, I really, you know, kind of doing like a mental review of like, all right, I really like this about the movie. I was really enjoying this. This was really good. All that sort of stuff. And then we get that narration, and just, all right, the narration and the tone of the characters, of the actor's voice in the ending, especially when it fades to black, and it's just almost a pleading questioning, that's what really hit me. The whole thing just came together because we were getting, you know, characters talking about this one character, and then about this other character, and this other character, and then that final question, and it's just like, oh my God, you know, like I said, it was a lot like the ending of Martyrs, where it's just, you sit there and you just kind of go, what the fuck? And I didn't know what to do.
I definitely,
I sat there, and the movie ends and it fades to black and this character's still talking and then it goes silent. And I'm just like, I felt like physically the same way I felt when I finished Martyrs, just like, oh my God. And there's just tears running down my face. I'm like, holy shit. And I'm like, I didn't know what to do. I just sat there. I was like, I have to watch this other movie, but I don't know what to do. I couldn't say anything about it. I just didn't know how to feel about what I had just seen, mm-hmm. you know, and it's definitely not what I was expecting it to be, because from the trailer, from the synopsises we've seen online, it seems like it's going to be... I think it's a lot like when I was first reading about Martyrs, and I thought, oh, this is going to be like this type of movie, and then it's something completely different. This is very much the same way, in that he constructs these stories to... You think you're going to get one thing when you start out, things take a turn, but the turn makes sense, and as you progress through the movie and you get to the end, it all sort of comes together, and you sort of, you know, it hits you, and it, like I said, it was just knocked me on my ass. I didn't know what to do. I sat there in silence. I was just stunned. As far as Jessica Biel goes, it was a little distracting at first, but I got into her character as the movie went on. Jodelle Ferland was amazing as Jenny. She plays a kind of a mute character through the movie, and I was really, really impressed with her just from beginning to end. I mean, the entire cast of this movie was fantastic. The little boy who plays David, Jessica Biel's son, was really good. I think this was like his first movie, and he was really good. But I think, unfortunately, this movie is going to get unfairly compared to Martyrs. That a lot of horror fans, because this has been, you know, promoted to horror fans as being, you know, oh, it's the next Pascal Ogier film. And I think a lot of horror fans are going to get pissed off because they're going to go into it expecting something like Martyrs, and that's not what this is.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's just flat out not a horror film.
No, it's not.
It's really not. I mean, in the beginning, you might even think, in the beginning, because it's, you know, there was a lot of action going on, and but then it just, and I was even, just Jennifer was watching this with me last night, and so the whole time, like, she's like, I kept waiting for the horror, and I'm like, yeah, there isn't any. I mean, there's a lot going on. There's a lot of drama. There's a lot of emotion, you know, but there is no horror. Yeah. So do not expect there to be horror. You won't get it.
Yeah.
But it's still a really good movie.
Yeah. I like I said, I wasn't like at first, I didn't know if Logier had written this. I know he directed it, obviously. And then when I got to opening credits of written and directed, I was like, oh, okay, awesome. And I got to say, now having seen two of his films now, I can safely say that I am really impressed with him as a writer and a director. I am looking forward to seeing anything else he does. You know, he clearly has a good grasp on not only creative storytelling, but how to write an emotionally charged, very, you know, heartfelt story. And also he can do, you know, splatter, which we saw in Martyrs, and still have a, you know, a deep philosophical story going on there. And he can do this dark drama with another, you know, philosophical thing kind of going through it. And, you know, it was definitely a movie I didn't see where it was going to go from beginning to end. I wasn't sure where the hell I was going.
No, not in the least.
That's really something that is rare, I can get into a movie that much where I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know what the hell's actually going on. And once it came to the end, I thought, you know, I was kind of unsure about it until the very end, to that last 5 minutes. And I was just like, that's when it really all just comes together. And I was just like, holy shit. So like I said, I highly recommend this. I will probably, if this comes to a theater near me, I will probably go out and see it in the theater when it's released, just to, you know, further help support this movie. Now I'm even more pissed that Dimension decided to can Logier from the remake of Hellraiser, because now having
I always thought that would have been he would have been an excellent choice for that.
Yeah,
I really did, because he's already done the skinning thing.
Right, but I mean, I almost felt like Martyrs might have been a fluke. Like, going into this, I wasn't sure, and I really, like I said, I was constantly, you know, kind of questioning throughout, and I was kind of, like, critiquing little things in my head, but then when I came to the end of it, I was like, okay, yeah, this guy really is a very talented writer-director, and I'm really, really excited to see what he does next. Martyrs wasn't a fluke, that this guy really is that talented, and I can't wait to see what he does next. So, I mean, if he had done Hellraiser, holy shit, would it have been amazing. You know, I mean, not even just visually, but like storyline wise, he would have done an amazing job. Mm-hmm. So more reason for me to hate Dimension Pictures. Yeah, I would recommend this, like I said. And your final sort of thoughts on this, because like I said, I don't want to spoil it.
I recommend it.
Okay.
I do. For people who love good film. Mm-hmm. I cannot recommend it to horror fans, because it just doesn't fit the bill. It doesn't. But if you just want to see a good movie. Mm-hmm. A really good movie, and if you're a Logier fan, then definitely check it out. Just don't expect the horror. Yeah. Other than that, I have no problems with it. I thought it was really, really well done. It's a beautiful movie, and the story was, I had a lot of wow, mm-hmm. you know, going on, you know, and especially at the end, I'm just like, wow, you know.
Yeah. There's so much going on, but it's never... This is one of those things where I think Logier is one of those directors who's proven that he can make a movie where there's a lot of stuff going on. He's spinning a lot of plates and none of them fall. Until the very end, and then it's just like everything comes together and you're just like, oh my god. And this is a movie that I could not pin down where it was going at any point. You know, every time it started to take a turn, I was like, what the fuck are we doing? What the hell's going on? And there's a lot of stuff that, if you've seen the trailer, it, you know, that's where they put all, like, the big action scenes are in the trailer. And that's not really what this movie's about. I mean, those scenes are there. They're a part of the story, but they're not really the big important part of the story. So, I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. I mean, I think it's safe to say, you know, we both recommend it. Mm-hmm. I recommend it with the caveat that, I'm not recommending it as a horror film,
yeah.
But other than that, I do. So enjoy.
Yes. All right. So we will be right back with listener feedback and closing out the show. Okay. So first up, we got an email from Sean Gabron. And Sean says, hey, David, just finishing up episode 26 and the Psycho sequels were brought up. Yes, they were. He said, you questioned the availability of the sequels. I said, I found the collection, a DVD collection of 2, 3, and 4 at Kmart or Walmart last year for $7. So they are available. Awesome. I will probably either head out to my local Walmart within the next few weeks or maybe try Amazon. As far as quality, he says, well, maybe it's because I had very low expectations, but I really enjoyed Psycho 2. Part 3 was all right, more so just reestablishing the status quo. Part 4 was a pretty fun flick. Nothing spectacular, but overacted, some crap spots in the script, but it was fun. He said, overall, I'd say they were worth a watch. So thank you, Sean. I seem to think I've seen parts of the Psycho sequels on, like, Sci-Fi Channel. Like, way back in the day, I think my reaction was, they made sequels to Psycho, and then proceeded to walk out of the room. I'm looking forward to... I will probably save up a little cash for come October time, because Walmart and Target and most Blockbusters, if you can still find those, tend to have, like, a really good selection of cheap horror movies come October. That's how I got my Nightmare on Elm Street series for, like, $5 a copy a couple years ago at a Walmart. So I will probably hit up my local Walmart come October and see what I can find for cheap horror movies that are probably, like, $5 or whatever or less. And we will, of course, do the Psycho sequels at some point once I get a hold of them. So we have a voicemail from Mike from the Badass Boobs and Blood.
Well, by the way, I would like to say hi to Sean.
Oh, yes.
Before you jump into the next one.
Sorry.
Thank you for taking the time to write in. Yes, even though you didn't mention me at all, I'll say hello to you. I'm kidding. Okay, now continue.
Okay. So yes, we have a voicemail from Mike from Badass's Boobs and Body Counts that he sent us, so we'll play that right now.
Hello, David and Jamie. This is Mike from Badass's Boobs and Body Counts.com. Just some quick feedback on your latest episode. I believe it's 26, where you covered Thinner. Great film. I've always loved it. I thought the fat suit and the so-called thin suit, though he didn't have a suit on, but they did make him look awful thin towards the end of the film, were done fantastically, and I also believe they hold up real well. I also wanted to touch down something on what David had mentioned about Tim Burton. Burton hasn't had an original thought in his head since Big Fish. He's really just been a director for hire after that film, at least in my opinion. Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, Sweeney Todd, Alice in Wonderland, Dark Shadows, all remakes, and all very subpar if compared to the original. Now, I did like Corpse Bride. I love animated films with a horror theme, so that worked for me, although it wasn't completely original. And also, the remake of Planet of the Apes, an absolutely terrible film. I really miss Burton's Edward Scissorhands, his Beetlejuice, his Ed Wood, his Mars Attacks, his Sleepy Hollow. That's what I want to see from Tim Burton. Unfortunately, that's not what we're getting, and I don't think we'll ever see another original film from him, sadly. Anyway, that's it for me. I've babbled way too long. You guys have a good show, and we'll listen soon. Bye.
So, thank you so much, Mike, for the feedback.
Hey, Mike.
I totally forgot about a bunch of those Tim Burton movies. Thank you for reminding me. I didn't see Big Fish.
It was really good, and he has an excellent point. I agree with him completely.
Yeah, I've heard it was good. I just didn't get around to seeing it. I totally forgot about Mars Attacks because I probably saw it once, like in the theater with my dad when it came out.
Do not run.
Yeah.
We are your friends.
Yeah. But yeah, I would. Go ahead.
I just want to say real quick, Mike, thank you for throwing in the Reanimator soundtrack and the theme in the back there. That was awesome.
Yes.
I love it when they leave us messages with background music.
I know, right?
Kind of sexy.
But yeah, I would totally agree. Burton is just, he's fallen off. I don't know what the fuck happened, honestly. But yep, that's about it. There's something. Oh, Planet of the Apes. Yes, that was fucking horrible. I totally forgot about that movie because I watched it once and then proceeded to block it from my memory because it was so fucking terrible.
Yeah, it was bad.
Yeah. And I really like the original. Like, the original is cheesy as shit, but it's awesome.
I know, but I love it.
Yeah,
and that whole thing was bad.
Yeah, that was just all kinds of bad, and yeah, just fuck that movie. Anyway, so thank you guys for writing and calling in. We much appreciate it. Next week we're gonna do a trauma double feature because I heart trauma, and you should too. I will be doing Poltergeist, Night of the Chicken Dead, which is fucking hilarious, and we're gonna be doing the classic, The Toxic Avenger from 1980 something. I don't remember.
That's right, bitches.
We're gonna get traumatized. It's gonna be fun. So, that's pretty much it for this episode. Do you have any final thoughts, Jamie, before we head out tonight?
Just as usual, I want to thank everyone for giving us your time. We appreciate that more than you know. And anyone who has bounced around and listened to other shows that we've been on or that, you know, we really appreciate that. And, you know, podcast listeners are extremely loyal.
Yes.
And for you to be able to gain them when they hear you somewhere else, you know, and then they're interested in hearing more from you, that is a huge compliment.
Definitely.
And it means the world to me. I appreciate you guys like you wouldn't believe. Yeah. But, you know, keep writing and keep calling and let us know you're out there because
yeah.
We love you.
And if you guys have suggestions for something you'd like us to cover on the show, by all means, let us know. And like I said, email your Skype contact info to me and we will try and get you in for, if you want to come in for a bonus episode, we'll definitely try and get you in for a conversation.
It would be fun. Yeah. I would love to have a listener join us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that is pretty much it. I can't think of anything else. It's been a weird recording tonight, but definitely check out The Tall Man. If it's still available when you're hearing this on VOD, check it out, or see it in the theater, get it on DVD, whatever, check it out. And Absentia was awesome, so check that one out too.
Yep, watch them both. We had a good week this week.
Yes, we did, which was great, because I hate when we have bad movie weeks, like Terror Trap. That fucking movie. Anyway, so that's it for this week. We will be back next week with Poltergeist, Toxic Avenger, and we'll probably throw Troll 2 into an episode somewhere along the line, because I want to do that one. I love Troll 2. So, thank you everybody for listening, and we will see you next week.
Bye.
Bye, everybody.
If you wish to contact Devour the Podcast, you can reach us by email at CenobiteDave, that's CenobiteDave at gmail.com, or Maven1974 at gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter at D Delamorte, DDELLAMORTE, or Maven1974. To visit the site, go to devourthepodcast.blogspot.com. And now you can leave a message on our fancy new voicemail at 760-661-7280.